Welcome to the Creative Pen Podcast. I'm Joanna Penn, thriller author and creative entrepreneur, bringing you interviews, inspiration, and information on writing, publishing options, and marketing ideas for your book. You can find the episode show notes, your free author blueprint, and lots more information at thecreativepen.com. And that's pen with a double N. And here's the show. Hello, creatives. I'm Joanna Penn, and this is episode number 327 of the podcast. It's Friday, 23rd of June, 2017, as I record this. So today I'm talking about how to use dictation to write faster and stay healthy with Scott Baker, a topic I know many of you want to hear more about. So I got into dictation about 18 months ago after I had Monica Leonel on the podcast, and I've had a couple of people talk about it, Elle Casey as well, and I've always been really impressed with people who get so much done with dictation. So I keep trying to master it, and about 18 months ago, gosh, actually, it's about 2 years now. when my RSI got bad, I started dictating more. I did Destroyer of Worlds with dictation, and that's the book that's up for an award. So you never know, it might be related. Then I fell off the wagon as I started yoga, and my RSI disappeared, and my health in general got better. But last weekend, I dictated while walking along the canal, and I just talked, and then I paid for transcription. I use speechpad.com because the thing that keeps holding me back is the sort of punctuation issue with Dragon. So I decided, right, I need to just get back into the habit, and then I'll move into the punctuation again over time. So I have Dragon and it does work, but I've just been making excuses. So I was like, right, I'm just going to do like I do on the podcast and I'll pay for transcription. And I actually did 2,700 words in 45 minutes, which was pretty amazing. And it's not bad, actually. I read it back after it came back, and yeah, it's pretty good. I mean, it's first draft material will always need an edit. So I don't know, I'm quite happy with doing it, and I'm very excited to be trying more of Scott's tips. So I hope you enjoy the show today. Not much in publishing this week, nothing significant. I mean, last week was huge on publishing news, so I won't be doing that today, nothing too interesting. In futurist stuff, I'm actually reading The Blockchain Revolution, How the Technology Behind Bitcoin is Changing Money, Business and the World by Don Tapscott. Now, there's a book by Don Tapscott called Growing Up Digital, which I read back in 2009, and pretty much was the reason I started on Twitter and on YouTube, because the way he described the way the world was going to be, I found that his argument was very convincing. So when I saw this book, The Blockchain Revolution, by him again, I was like, wow, you know, he's one of the people who picks the next big thing. And I've been hearing more and more about cryptocurrency, and also Orna Ross and I were talking about it on our last salon, and how it might change things for creatives, how contracts might work, how micropayments will be more practical, and lots of things that are very exciting. Because if you think about how the transformation in many markets that the internet has caused, if you think about how all of our lives have been impacted by the internet and publishing, and things like taking an Uber, how the internet has disrupted driving, and hotels with Airbnb, and just whole industries being disrupted by the internet, and finance and the banking industry, which is something that many of us mistrust in so many ways because of for so many reasons. This is really a book about how the financial industry will be disrupted by global, the internet of everything and the internet of finance, and it's super interesting. I've been trying to sort of upskill myself in the financial area. It's an area many of us creatives feel underconfident in, but I totally recommend Tony Robbins' book Unshakable, which is fantastic about getting your money sorted. And then this book, The Blockchain Revolution, is really sort of about the next 10 to 20 years and how things will change. So I am going to be talking to someone in November. I'm going to be doing a podcast about publishing in 2027. which is going to be fun. Those of you who enjoy my futurist stuff will look forward to that, because November this year is the 10th anniversary of the Kindle. So I thought it'd be fun to try and imagine. And who would have thought 10 years ago, back in 2007, how the world would be now? So I'm like, okay, well, so what will things be like in 2027? And I'll be having a lovely interviewer, well, kind of as someone to discuss this with in November. So part of the reading the blockchain revolution is trying to think about the next 10 years. And I know that might be too big for many of you, but hey, you know, someone's got to do it. So it might as well be me. And I really enjoy thinking about this stuff. Okay, so my personal update this week. It's not been a great week for first drafting, to be honest. I've only done a couple of thousand words on the MacBook because there's been a ton of other stuff going on. I spoke in London on Monday and basically had a couple of days out because I was doing family things and networking stuff, and my sister had a baby, so I had some cuddling time out. And I did a debate on Monday night at the Groucho Club, one of those exclusive London clubs with a secret doorway in Soho. You know, one of those places you've heard about all your life, and then you're like, oh, I'm going to speak there. And actually, it wasn't all that, to be honest. The debate was on self-publishing, vanity or opportunity. And I was up against a renowned literary agent. And the questions I was sent in advance were pretty anti-indie, to be honest. And I was super nervous. I prepared a lot. I wrote like 6 pages of notes. I took it very seriously. And it kind of turned out that no one had taken it as seriously as me. So I was just over-prepared. But in the end, I had a good time. Thanks to Suki Jutler, Orna Ross and Rohan Quine, who came to support me at the event. And it was really interesting because in the end, it wasn't so much a debate as agreeing. Me and the agent, Ewan Thornycroft, we actually agreed on a lot of things. For example, some authors are much more suited to having an agent and a publisher. The agents can do a great job at foreign rights, at film and TV rights, at things that the author still can't do, and that some people just aren't suited to running their own business, which is what you have to do to be a successful indie. But I pointed out that most authors don't do this for the money anyway, and in fact most traditionally published authors and most indie authors have a day job, and they're happy to have a day job. They're not doing it for the money, they're doing it for creative expression. And I kind of, you know, my argument was, look, you can't put the genie back in the bottle. It's not just the publishing arena, it's everything. You know, people are expressing themselves. It used to be that there was radio and there was TV and there was professional photography, and now there's everyone's starting a podcast, everyone's got a YouTube channel, everyone's got Instagram or Facebook or Twitter or any one of these other things. So people are expressing themselves in the way that they love to do. Think about Etsy or, you know, all these different things. You know, people are now released from there being so many gatekeepers. Now, whether or not that becomes a massive hit is not really the point. But if you're someone who expresses yourself through writing, if you're someone who can't figure out the world without writing it down, and that's basically how I am, I don't really know what I think until I write it, you can't stop yourself from writing, and now you can publish. Well, you know, it's not going to stop, it's only going to increase. And I talked about the global growth, as I often do, and how I'm excited about that and the growth of AI in helping us with discoverability, and the way that, you know, hopefully these tools are emerging and will get better and better, so that even with more and more books, people will still be able to discover more. I also said, which was quite funny because it's always quite blasphemous in the publishing arena, I said that everyone in the world should write a book. And everyone was like, ah, that's terrible, but what about all the terrible books? And my point was, look, you know, we're an industry. We, for every book you write or I write, we read a heck of a lot more because we're researching, we're learning. So if you encourage every person to write a book, they will read a heck of a lot more than they do at the moment. So that's my goal, is everybody should write at least one book, and we should all be encouraging everyone to write a book, because when they do, they'll read a lot more, and thus we become a self-sustaining industry, which is awesome. I guess my main point overarching my whole, I guess everything I do online is about empowering the author. So you are empowered to make your own choices. You know,
And that's my mission, is to kind of make sure that you know your choices and understand them and then make the right decision for you. So that might be signing a contract with an agent or a publisher. And in fact, I had a great chat with Ewan about my own career and the fact that I might, pitch one of my projects at traditional publishing just to, see if, well, a particularly commercial project that might lend itself to film or TV, and see if that is a way in. But it would be an empowered choice. And I know a lot about contracts now, so I'd know what I was signing. And that's the most important thing. So you are empowered to put your books out there and you get to choose. So that's exciting. I'll also be talking about that debate with Honor Ross on our salon next week, which is basically, we do a advanced discussion on what's going on in publishing over the last month. And you can find that on the Alliance of Independent Authors podcast feed. Oh, and one of the tweets that came out of the evening, it was one of those talks where they have a sort of board behind you with all the live tweeting. And one lady said, I walked in a self-publishing indie hater and now I'm ready to go write my own. What an amazing night. Thank you so much. And that was one lady who was just totally convinced by my empowerment argument. So that's cool. This week, I've also proofed how to market a book in print, and you can now pre-order the print book as well as the ebook. And I just got an email from my audiobook narrator that the files are there for me to proof the audiobook as well. So that's cool. I'm almost sort of getting that ready for launch. And also, I spent yesterday with my mum and we were going through the third book in The Sweet Romance and reverse outlined it. And it's really interesting because I'm kind of working as a co-writer, but also an editor in this process with The Sweet Romance. And my mum's quite similar to me, and it's, well, I'm quite similar to her, I guess. And she's a discovery writer as I am, and, can't see the meaning in the book or the character development. And so we spent the afternoon reorganizing the book, and now she's going to go back and do some rewrites, and then I'll get it back and do my editing run over it. And it's very interesting. And I'm actually learning a lot about story structure from being more of a editor co-writer than my own writing, where it's a kind of a different approach. So that's very interesting. We still work with an editor as well after the book is in a sort of decent draft. And it's great to see how much she's improved by book three. So I hope that encourages everybody that you can improve. The first book took her 2 years and now we're on number three. So yeah, things are going. I've also got the book two in that series to edit. So at the moment, I've been thinking this week has been very much about the starting energy for that third book, but also finishing energy for how to market a book and for the second book in the Sweet Romance, and rather than the starting energy on the map book. So I think there's these different types of energy that we have to put into the project at different phases. And it's very important to understand, because so many authors get the energy wrong at the wrong time, or don't recognize their strengths and weaknesses. So for example, I met a guy once who was like, oh, I've got 15 books on the go. I just love writing. I write 5,000 words a day. I just love it. And I'm like, okay, that's fantastic. And he's like, but I never edit. I never publish. So he had amazing starting energy, but no finishing energy. So he couldn't actually get anything out there. Those authors who get obsessed about typos and grammar and word choice in the first draft, that is kind of bringing finishing energy into what should be your starting energy. The people who can never kind of, get past chapter two or chapter three because they just keep doing it. So take away that finishing energy and focus on that sort of starting enthusiasm where you're just, throwing stuff at the page. So of course we all have different processes, but I do think that we have this starting energy that gets us through that initial draft. And then the finishing energy is really all the polishing and stuff that goes into getting, when you get to the point of hating the book and you never want to see it again, that's when you need finishing energy to get it into the world and focus on the launch. So for example, this How to Market a Book third edition, you guys, most of you haven't seen it yet, although I have, I've sent it out to the platinum supporters on Patreon. So thank you to everyone there. But most people don't have this. But I've got it on my desk. I'm holding it right now. And it's like, oh yeah, it's out. But actually, it's not out. I actually have to focus on launching it. And it's been interesting because I have been, obviously, as I'm writing, more and more stuff comes out from other authors. I've been having a look at other people's books. I was looking yesterday at Tim Grohl's book launch blueprint, looking at ideas for my own launch on how to market a book, which is actually quite meta if you think about it. very meta. And actually, you can get Tim's book launch blueprint for free. You can obviously buy it on Amazon, but you can also get it for free. I have a special link at thecreativepen.com/launch. That's the book launch blueprint. So that's very cool. Tim also has a podcast on book launches. So he's a real expert. There's so much I could do to launch my own book on marketing, but you know, I was thinking about maybe doing a sort of Facebook party. And then I was like, no, I hate that. So that's the other thing. You're empowered to make your own choices around marketing as well. Very important to focus on what, you know, brings you joy in your life, as well as getting your books out there. Right. So thanks for all your emails and tweets and comments this week. Ellen Bard was listening to the show in the Egyptian Museum, looking at the mummies, and also in the Forbidden City in Beijing, which is very cool. Daisy Lythe says, listening to the show, trying to decipher the mystery of who got into the bin. And lovely picture of two, what looked like husky dogs. Very, very cute. Feel Good Craft says, catching up on the podcast while crocheting and doing a happy dance at the mention on the show with Dan. So you can do another happy dance now. Icy Sedgwick says, the interview with Rebecca Cantrell got me plotting my Victorian horror thriller, which is fantastic. And Jeff Adams, listening on a drive to San Francisco. And Kate Craik, deep into the first draft of what began as a crime novel. So this week's show on writing mystery was super helpful. And finally, Tim Moon, listening while packing. My wife and I are moving to a new home near Shanghai as I leave teaching first grade ESL to write full time. Fantastic, Tim. And congrats on the move. I have not yet been to China. It's one of those places. I feel China's a bit like South America for me. I haven't been to South America either. I've traveled a lot, but when I think about China, it's so big and I don't know enough about so much. And I want to, when I go there, I will obviously want to write a book. So I want to learn more first. And in fact, this week there was blog post on traveling and writing by the lovely J.H. Moncrief, which was, you know, I wrote quite a long introduction to, because for me, traveling is about writing and about sort of researching for books. And that leads us nicely on to today's show is sponsored by my own How to Write a Novel course, which I created while writing End of Days. So you get a behind the scenes look at how the book came together. And of course, End of Days has a lot set in Israel, and I had a trip to Israel. And it's interesting to, you know, to reflect on how that book came from the various ideas. So I talk about ideas as well as all the other things that you need to write a novel. And the course has videos, audios and slides, so you can do it at your own pace. There's also a private Facebook group. So is it for you? Is it your dream to write a novel, but you just don't know where to start? Or have you started writing only to run out of ideas? Or are you suffering from self-doubt about whether you're good enough to write a novel? Or are you overwhelmed by all the information and craft books out there? If you've answered yes to any of these questions, then the course might be for you. One course member, Lee Anderson, said, this course is exactly what I was looking for. I now feel well on my way to writing and completing my first draft. It has been a real breakthrough. And you can find out more at thecreativepen.com/write-novel. Okay, so that kind of a sponsorship pays for the hosting and transcription, but my time in producing the show is primarily sponsored by you guys. So a big thank you to all the people supporting on Patreon. And of course, you've got your Q&A, which you can get on the RSS feed last week or the week before. I lose track of time. Thanks to new patrons, Lynn Milford, Linda Holder, Samantha Garner, Anya Bauermeister, Justin Adams, Cindy Stabile, and Anthony Young. Thank you so much to everyone supporting the show on Patreon. I really appreciate it. It demonstrates that you enjoy the show and want it to continue. Onwards to 400, that's what I say. And on Patreon, of course, you can support me with just a couple of dollars a month. less than a coffee a month, and you'll get the extra monthly Q&A audio. And of course, if you're a Platinum supporter, you'll get the How to Market a Book 3rd edition ebook, which is already on the feed. So if you join up, you will get that. Or you can obviously pre-order it and it will be out on the 6th of July. I'm not sure. My aim was to get the audiobook out on the same day, but because of the amount of time it takes for Audible to get files through, I don't think I'll manage that, but it will be out probably a week or so after. Of course, I'll announce it on the show. Right, let's get into the interview. Today, I'm here with Scott Baker. Hi, Scott.
Hello, Joanna Penn.
Just a little introduction. Scott writes books under various names and is a freelance writer, as well as the author of The Writer's Guide to Training Your Dragon and Quick Cheats for Writing with Dragon. And today we're talking about dictation, which is super exciting for many authors. But Scott, just start by telling us a bit more about you and your writing career, as well as how you got into dictation because of that career.
Okay. Well, I've been writing for, as you said, freelance for a bunch of magazines in the UK for many, many years. And, you know, I was always wanting to write fiction, always. And then one day I caught one of your videos, believe it or not, on YouTube, all about self-publishing. And you were talking to, you were saying how great the Kindle was. It was very early days then. I think you were in Australia or something.
Yes, oh my goodness, that would have been 2009.
That's it. It was 2009, 2010, something like that. And you were going on about the Kindle and self-publishing. And I thought, what is what? And I was so put off writing fiction because I kind of worked in the publishing industry, you know, as a freelance writer. And I thought, I don't want to go down that road, you know, of publishers and stuff. So I always put it off. And then you come along with this, you know, but you can do this. And I thought, right, that's it. That's blown it. I'm going to have to give this a go. And then I remember watching a video of you with Mark Coker from Smashwords, and you were talking about Barnes & Noble and all of these outlets that we could access through them at the time. But, you know, I'd never even heard of them. And I thought, well, this is crazy. So it's all your fault, basically.
Oh, well, I'm thrilled about that.
So what happened was I started, you know, writing fiction under different pen names, a bit of sci-fi, a bit of horror, lots of different things. And I was doing all right. You know, I was doing okay with it. And I was doing the freelance stuff as well. But I was starting to, you know, not struggle, but I was getting to the point where it was difficult to juggle it all and hit deadlines, keep my deadlines, my freelance deadlines. And I started looking into Dragon or dictation as a way really of just putting me on a level playing field with people who could type quickly, because I can't. I can, you know, the best I manage, I'm not like this, but you know, I'm like three or four fingers. So the best I can manage is about 40 to 50 words a minute. And, you know, it got to a point where I thought I'm going to have to, you know, speed up my workflow. So I started looking at Dragon, and I, you know, been using it 20 odd years ago when it was terrible. You know, people would openly point and laugh, you know, at the dribble that was coming up on screen. But I, even then, I remember seeing something in it. You know, I remember thinking there's something here. It's just way, way, way ahead of its time. Mm. And then when I started looking at it seriously again, 5 or 6 years ago, whatever it was, you know, people told me, oh, it's, you know, flung ahead now in reliability and accuracy. So I thought, well, I'll give it a go. And of course they were right. You know, it was night and day different to what I'd used a long time ago. So I thought, this is great. I'll get it trained up. I'll hit all my deadlines. I'll be throwing out fiction left, right, and center. And then I had a disastrous back injury. I had a bunch of herniated discs in my back, three at once, would you believe? So I was literally on my back for months. And I thought, now what am I going to do? You know, I couldn't sit up. I certainly couldn't type and, you know, sit at a desk. So I thought, okay, now it's time to get really serious. And luckily, I'd already started with Dragon at that point. And I managed to do it. I managed to go through, you know, several months of recovery and still get all my work done, get all my freelance work done, keep self-publishing, and write, you know, thousands and thousands of words. And I became kind of obsessed at that point, you know, because I thought this isn't just good, this is amazing software. Mm. And, you know, it became not just a tool for me to write more quickly at that point, it became an insurance policy, you know, against injury and whatever. And I became so intrigued by it that I thought, okay, I've got to drill down into how this really works, what the best equipment is, what the best techniques are to make it, you know, scarily accurate and, you know, just fulfill its potential. And once I'd kind of figured all that out, or most of it out, I wrote a book about it. So that's where we are now.
That is where we are now. And it's so interesting. Well, just before we get more into dictation. So you're obviously on the show as Scott, and we're talking about dictation, but how many books have you got now under other names? Like, you know,
my backlist is probably about 70 or 80.
Wow.
But most of them I'd rather forget. Now, some of them are good, very, very good. You know, I read some back and think, wow, I wrote that. That's, you know, I'm not so bad after all. But it got to the point, actually, the self-publishing became so successful at one point that I gave up the freelance work. The freelance work was kind of getting in the way of the self-publishing. I thought, you know, I start to see the benefit of having a backlist, for example. Mm. You know,
and how long? So you've written 70 books since 2009.
So since about 2010, I would say, yeah.
10. So
of varying length. Some of those are novellas.
Yeah. But 10, you know, 10 books a year, basically, with dictation.
A lot. Yeah.
Now that's awesome. And I mean, so obviously, you've described there two massive benefits of dictation. One is word count and words per hour. And two is if you have an injury or if you're suffering from RSI. And of course, I did dictation for one book for Destroyer of Worlds. And that was because at the time I had massive RSI. But then I took up yoga and I'm standing up now at my standing desk and it went away. But you mentioned their insurance policy. And I think that's so important because, you know, I'm now, you know, my husband left his job and, you know, supporting our family with my writing income. And for sure, if something happens, I want to be able to do that. So those are two things. I also wanted to ask you about voice. Do you think that, so those are two benefits, but you write in different genres. Do you find that your writing voice is more relaxed with dictation? Can you do different voices, you know, as in author voices, not made up voices, per genre? You know, have you found that better with dictation, or do you have to do a lot of editing of that?
That's a really good question. And I mean, just to be clear, I don't actually write any fiction anymore. I stopped about a month away in May. So I stopped about September, October of last year. I'm purely focused now on the dragon stuff. To answer your question, yes, I think your voice does change across different books. There are some people who even, you know, advocate having different profiles for different voice profiles for Dragon, depending on which genre you're writing in. But what I always found is that certain elements of my writing, especially fiction, were way better when I dictated. Now, this is the thing that everybody seems to be scared of. You know, how's my voice going to sound? Well, for me, it did make it better. It certainly made certain elements more conversational. Things like dialogue. Mm. I mean, my dialogue went through, you know, went way, way better when I dictated. It was more like people having an actual conversation,
yeah,
as opposed to characters. And I used to find there was a lot more humor in there. I'd find myself laughing at jokes when I was dictating. I mean, you're not supposed to laugh at your own jokes, but, you know, hey, whatever. But there were certain elements to it that I think improved my writing. And I certainly think it improved my nonfiction. Okay. But the interesting thing is when I was doing a lot of the freelance stuff for publishers, something I used to find really interesting was, there was never a transition period. At no point did any of my editors ever say, this doesn't seem like your usual writing, you know? And so there was clearly not a lot of difference between my typing and my dictation. And one thing I did notice, interestingly, is a lot of the articles I used to write, I used to do a lot of stuff for photography magazines and for technical magazines. And a lot of the articles I used to write were almost word for word in the magazine. So they seemed to require very little editing. And that was maybe partially from, you know, years of getting used to maybe the styles of those particular magazines. But it was also, I think, because the dictation was almost like somebody, you know, actually saying the words as opposed to just words on a page. And they seemed to be, you know, very clean by the time we got to the editor. But I mean, I've never really analyzed it in depth. I've just kind of got on with it to the point where I'm so used to dictation now. I don't even think about voice. You know, I don't think about how it would sound any different to type in anything, you know, genre, you know, or otherwise. I think that just comes from practice.
Yeah, no, I get that. And I think it is a really interesting thing. Now, let's just go through some more sort of process things.
Yeah.
Because I think the biggest thing is people think that, like, right now I should just dictate. And if, you know, as we're talking, I've just said, you know, when I say and, you know, there are things that you say when you're making things up on the fly. But what is it best to have in place before dictation? So should people be spending more time, for example, plotting or outlining or preparing an article with, say, bullet points? Or, you know, what is the preparation you should do before dictation?
I think that's a really good one as well, because I think it depends very much on what you write. I think if you are the sort of person who, you know, if you write complex science fiction or fantasy or whatever, I think it's pretty unlikely that you're a pantser, you know? I mean, you're going to have crazy character names and place names and world, you know, there's all sorts of world building going on and all that sort of thing. And it's very unlikely you're going to be the sort of writer in those genres who's making it up as you go along, and unless, you know, you count the last few seasons of The X-Files where they clearly did, but but, you know, they've forgotten what they wrote, I'm sure of it. But in other genres, I don't think it's as important. I think there's a lot, again, we talked about the conversational sort of style. I think it's great for things like romance, for example. I know a lot of romance writers who use it, and for non-fiction, I think it's terrific, you know. But even then, you have to, you know, have an element of plotting, an element or of notes or fact finding or whatever for any of those things anyway. You know, if I was going to write, for example, when I was back writing articles, you know, I would have everything, you know, bullet pointed out. When I was writing fiction, I was never a big plotter. I wasn't a pantser, but I did used to kind of bullet point things and have general sort of beats, but nothing, you know, too detailed. So I think it depends on the person. I think it also depends on the genre that you're in. But certainly some genres are going to be far more, you know, it's going to require you to plot in a lot more detail, because you have to concentrate on pronunciation. Mm. You have to concentrate on enunciation and whatever while you're still engaging the creative side of your brain. You know, so I think the plotting element then kind of helps you get past that. You know, you can, you know what your plot is going to be, you know what you want to say, and you can just get on with making Dragon get your words accurately up on screen. Having said that, again, it comes from practice. I think you get to a point where you dictate and you don't think about it. It's about making that jump from the words coming from here out of your fingers to from here and out of your mouth. And I think it's just a little mental leap. It takes some time. But it's certainly doable for anyone, I think.
Yeah, so that, and we'll come back to the more technical aspects in a minute. I think it's important to kind of talk about these more woolly aspects before we get into the details. But the mindset thing, I think, is a huge deal. And I definitely didn't crack it. I think it's probably a bit like a habit, isn't it? Like, I used to bite my nails, and then I had fake nails for a month. And that month broke my habit because I wasn't able to bite my nails. And so, and I think the problem is that I fell out of the habit. You know, I got into it and then I fell out of it and then I didn't get back into it. Whereas I have a habit of typing. And I think if you're a new writer, like if people listening, if you're a new writer, like try and do this with your first book and that might really help. But when you're on like number 23, it's quite hard to kind of break your process. But then immediately by saying that, I've got the wrong mindset. So let's talk about what is the mindset shift necessary to get you to that point, to sort of saying, yes, I am the type of person who can dictate.
For me, it's about embracing it as a productivity tool and not treating it, you know, it's a weapon in your writing arsenal, in your workflow. And don't treat it like it's something completely alien. I think you've just hit the nail on the head. You said, you know, in a way, we type because we're used to it. Mm. You know, it's familiarity that makes us type, really. You know, we're familiar with a keyboard. But, you know, that's not necessary. It isn't necessarily the best input method anyway. You know, keyboards, the QWERTY keyboard in particular, was designed to slow us down. Mm. You know, it was designed on typewriters, as you probably know, to stop the hammers hitting into each other, you know, when they hit the page. So, you know, again, it's familiarity. Input methods, you know, they keep changing. We've had, you know, the quill, and then we had the pen, and then we had the typewriter, and then we had the computer keyboard. And in the last few years, we've had touch. And touch is now, I would say, probably the primary daily input method for an awful lot of people. And I genuinely believe that the next big input method is voice. You know, it certainly seems that way. I think we're right in the middle of, you know, the AI wars right now between the big technology companies. They all want you to use their particular voice assistant. And it's a mishmash at the minute, as it always is, you know, when something is so new, and I'm sure that one or two will prevail. But, you know, it's about, they're wanting you to get used to using it in the home. They're wanting you to get used to using it in the car, and so on and so on. And it's, you know, it's already on your phone. People are starting to buy Amazon Echoes. I've got them. I think
yeah, me too.
They're great. They're great. I mean, I'm one of these people who, I love technology. You know, I'm very, you know, au fait with dictation. But the first time I asked it to, you know, play Arcade Fire off Spotify, and it did it, I was like, it's just crazy. The level of recognition is just amazing.
I still like asking ours to like turn the lights on and off. And I mean, it's crazy. It's like a really expensive light switch and stereo.
You got to do it because it's so much fun. I think it's put so much fun back into technology, you know. Mm. And there's other things that I think are just wonderful. But I know one of my neighbors, he bought one for his mother, who's like 90. She's literally 90. And she has an Amazon Echo. And she just uses it to turn on digital radio in the morning. And for that, for me, it's the best ever implementation of it. You know, if you live in an area where you can't even get digital radio, and now you've got it over the internet, but you're using your voice to summon it, you know, and it's about familiarity, becoming familiar with an input method. I mean, I've got two kids, one's 11, one's 6, and they don't care about talking to a computer. Mm-hmm. They have no qualms about it whatsoever. Yeah. And they're, you know, they're growing up with touch, they're growing up with voice, and, you know, you do wonder where it's all going to be in a decade, you know?
Yeah, I completely agree with you. And I mean, I think that the kid thing is really important. And you see, like my mum, who's 70, it's interesting. And I want to get her one, but she won't even have a phone, you know? So she skipped touch. She's very difficult with typing, and she won't go anywhere near voice. And the kid thing, I see that the point is, in the next 10 years, if we're not embracing voice, we will be behind, in the same way as if you don't have a smartphone right now, you know, you're missing out on a lot of technological help for authors. So I think that's really interesting. But
I also think that, as well as a mindset shift in terms of your actual writing, I think it's a motivational shift as well. Mm. I think you need to, you know, decide to do this, you know, and just think, I'm going to get so much more done here in possibly in a much shorter space of time. Mm. Even if you're a really fast typist, you know, you could think, well, I'm not going to be putting any strain on my wrists. I'm not going to put any strain on my back or my shoulders or whatever. And, you know, we're being told, it was even in the news today, you know, that being sedentary is as bad for you as smoking. And, you know, it's all of these things combined. But, you know, I think you need to take a look at it and think, okay, it's not just about getting words down. Yeah. You know, there are different. And in terms of what you said, you know, where are we going to be in a decade if we haven't embraced voice? That's a really good one, because you're going to see authors who are going to be crazy prolific, who are going to be pumping out books, you know, at an alarming rate through dictation. And if you just can't keep up, then that's going to affect your bottom line as well. And that, I think that's especially, you know, important again for anybody who writes nonfiction or articles or anything like that. Mm. So there's so many different reasons. And I think the mindset is, it has to be motivational as well to to get more done, more you know, be more productive through voice.
Yeah, definitely. Okay, and also let's say also more creative, because I think some people are you know, are not interested in the productivity thing. But even if you want to take longer to write, getting that first draft down and using your natural voice, like if you're at the beginning of your author journey, the best way to find your author voice, the things that make your writing you, is probably through actually speaking, as opposed to coming up with a sentence that you've agonized over, you know, that you would have done in your English class. So
absolutely.
I think it's really interesting. So let's, again, before we get into the technical stuff, what, the process after dictating that first draft, obviously, like when I'm typing a first draft, I will then print it out and hand edit. Is that, are you still editing by hand or on the computer, or do you, you know, what's your editing process like, or what is the average editing process like?
Exactly the same as yours. I edit by hand. Mm. I use an iPad Pro. I'm looking around for it. An iPad Pro with a pencil, you know. I used to use a Surface Pro. Same idea. So what I'll do is I'll create my first draft of anything in Dragon, and then I'll just spit it out as a PDF, and then I'll just sit and, you know, mark it up using a digital pen. And then what I'll do is I'll split screen it. So I'll have my, on one side of the screen, I'll have my PDF with all of my markup. And on the other side of my screen, I'll have my manuscript. And I can make my changes on the right by looking at them on the left. And of course, you know, that's just, you know, and I might go through that a couple of times. You know, it depends what the editing for that particular thing is. But I don't edit at all with Dragon. It's, for me, it's purely a first draft tool, and I think that's probably the best way to approach it. I think it can actually interfere with editing in some ways. You know, it's enough to get it to actually. I say in the book, you know, it's a bit like a dog riding a bicycle. You know, the act of dictation, the act of words appearing on a screen when you speak them is ridiculous. You know, the fact that it even happens is mind-boggling, you know, and with such accuracy. So it's like a dog riding a bicycle. It ain't pretty, you know, but look the fact that it's doing it. It's riding that bike, you know. So I kind of think, just get it to do the first draft and leave it there. You know, after that, editing is very much a pen and paper, or in my case, a digital pen and screen process.
Yeah, that was funny. When I said by hand, I actually meant with a pen on paper. God, I love your process. But that's, and then I think also what's important is you say in the book, transcription is the unsung hero of dictation. So what do you mean? I guess, just explain what you mean by transcription when it comes to Dragon, and why is that so good?
Okay, well, for anyone who doesn't even maybe know what transcription is, it's basically the act of speaking into a smartphone or a voice recorder. Look at my troll voice recorder. That's actually called a dead cat, by the way.
Yeah,
that's
a real term for
it. But you get a little voice recorder, or you get your smartphone or whatever it is you've got, and you just talk into it, you record it, you make a recording of your voice, and then that file is then output later. You can either drag and drop it from a voice recorder, from a memory card, or you can upload it to the cloud if you've got a smartphone. And you get back to your desk, and there it is sitting in your cloud storage. You then drag it into Dragon, and all your words magically appear on screen. So that is transcription. And, you know, it's amazing because, you know, dictation is great and all that, but it still involves you sitting at a desk, you know, with a microphone attached with a cord, you know. And yes, you can get, you know, wireless microphones and all of that, but, you know, they can be really patchy in terms of quality and accuracy, and unless you're paying stupid amounts of money. So, you know, the problem with dictation is you're still sedentary. You know, so even if you think, right, I'm going to get up and I'm going to move about and all of that, it's tricky to do it with straight dictation. Transcription, on the other hand, is, you know, like the holy grail for writers, because you can dictate pretty much anywhere at any time without needing to be in front of a computer, you know. So and don't get me wrong, it, you know, if you've got a smartphone, you need something half decent. You need something like an iPhone or Samsung Galaxy or something like that, because the microphone in there, the sound chip that's in there has to be good in order to process your voice in the same way the microphone for your dictation has to be good. Mm. But, you know, if you haven't got a phone like that, then you buy a cheap little recorder, like something for $40, $50 from Sony or Olympus or someone like that. And you've got a dedicated device that works absolutely brilliantly for transcription. Mm. So, you know, so that's it, basically. It's the ultimate way, in my eyes, to be portable anywhere. And those moments where, you know, you were doing the dishes or you're sitting waiting for your kid to come out of school or you're going for a walk, you know, suddenly you can dictate while you're doing that. And
I think the point there, and I what put me off, I think, with Dragon when I was doing it was I was trying to dictate into the software, and right. then you're half your brain or more than half your brain is concentrating on, is it getting the words right on the screen and then correcting yeah. them? Whereas I think this transcription idea is probably the way to deal with it, in that just forget about it while you're doing it and then fix it up in that editing. I mean, even if, you know, because I find First Draft is the hardest part. I actually really like editing. So even if Dragon gets it wrong as it's transcribing, it's easier to fix it then than fix it on the fly. So I'm almost thinking that that's what I'll do next time, is entirely go with transcription.
Or alternatively, sit back, close your eyes, you know, have a really long USB cable going from your headset or whatever to your computer. Sit back in a chair and just dictate that way. And, you know, do 20 minutes. And when you're done, then look at the screen.
Oh, I just don't have that discipline. I wouldn't be able to look at it.
Transcription is for you, Ben.
Yeah, exactly. So then the other thing that people have an issue with, of course, is punctuation. Mm-hmm. They're like, I don't want to say new line, open quote, hello, comma, close quote. He said, period, full stop, whatever.
Sounds so terrible.
I know. Do you think that you could just, again, if your assumption is that you're, am I making too big a deal of it? Should you just get used to that, or should you add in the punctuation later, for example?
No, you've got to do it. You've got to do it. I'm joking. You say, you know, you didn't make it sound terrible. It is terrible. It's awful. You know, it's the one bit that people quite rightly dread, you know, because you do have to go open quote, what time are we going to the cinema, comma,
question close mark. Quote.
Oh, it's a nightmare, you know. But it's like anything. It's with practice you get used to it. It's certainly not such a big issue for nonfiction, obviously. Mm. It's when you're writing dialogue, it becomes hell. But just do it, suck it up. You know, there's no point in my eyes not doing it, because you have to, if you want to dictate successfully, I think you have to get into this flow state where you are just dictating. And if you can be, you know, same the punctuation as you talk, then you've got to get yourself to that point. And I don't think about it anymore. I never think about it. I it's funny now when I'm doing other things, if I'm, you know, just dictating a text message into my phone, I save the punctuation. I just don't think about it anymore, you know? Yeah. So I'll say, see you in 5 minutes, full stop. And I just don't think anymore about it. So I think that comes from practice more than anything. Don't get me wrong. But I think it's important to get that practice in, because it helps with every element, including the punctuation. So, you know, instead of, you know, dictate text messages, dictate emails, instead of typing in something to Google Maps, you know, if you want to go somewhere, make a point of hitting the little microphone and asking Google to take you to that place. You know, just get used to using these voice assistants that are everywhere. And I think you get used to every element of dictation as a result. And the punctuation just comes naturally.
Yeah, so let's just briefly do some tech, although I don't want to get too techy, because, of course, your book is only a few dollars and contains the hardware and software you recommend. But just briefly, if people want to get into it, what do you recommend if they just want to get started, for example?
Well, I mean, first things first, you're going to need Dragon software if you're going to do this. There's no getting around that. You know, whether you've got a Mac or PC or whatever, there's loads of different free solutions. You know, the thing that people say the most is, how can I do this without buying Dragon? Well, you can't, basically. You know, unless you want to do just very basic dictation, if you want to do the odd letter or the odd email, then, you know, there is dictation built into Google Docs, for example. There's dictation built into the Mac OS, even into Windows. And some of it's okay. You know, some of it works quite well. But the problem is none of these other tools can actually learn how you write. You know, it's not just about understanding your voice. It's about understanding how you write. And only Dragon can do that because you can train it to do that. And you can, again, going back to the crazy world building and fantasy novels and all of that, if you've got crazy place names or character names, you can put those into the Dragon vocabulary, you know, and train the software to hear your voice saying those words, and it'll get them, you know. And it's things like that that, again, help you get into that flow state. You'll never be able to do it with the free solutions out there. And you can't correct them either. That's the other side of the coin. You know, if they get something wrong, tough. You know, you just have to change it with the keyboard. Whereas with Dragon, you say correct that, and it corrects it, and it gets it right the next time. So you need Dragon. First things first. You need either Mac or a PC. Anything, you know, relatively modern will do. An i5 processor, 8 gigs of RAM, an SSD preferably. If you've got something like that, you're good to go. The only one caveat is that the PC software is significantly better than the Mac software. So if you are a Mac user, luckily you have two options. You can just, you know, plow on and get the Mac version of Dragon, or you can put the PC version on your Mac using Bootcamp or something called Parallels. So, you know, that's basically it. In terms of, you know, not wanting to spend too much money, just getting started, I'm reluctant to encourage people to do that.
I get that. What about microphone?
Yeah. Well, this is it. I think you've got to view the whole thing as an investment, and you absolutely have to get a decent microphone, because people get hung up a little bit on the specs of the computer and, oh, which software do I get? The most important part of your setup is going to be your microphone. It's again, I mentioned it in the book, it's garbage in equals garbage out. If you've got like a cheap $10 microphone, or, you know, people say, oh, can I use my Bluetooth headset? And no, no, you can't. You know, these things don't work as well as they need to. They're not made for dictation. They're not made more specifically for speech recognition. So you need something that Dragon is going to be able to accurately decipher what you're saying. So you need a really clear microphone. Just looking at what you've got there on screen, you've got like a decent mic there. I've got like a Rode, like podcast type mic. So anything that's really clear, a Blue Yeti, all of those sorts of mics are really good. But you don't have to go crazy. You know, you can spend $40, $50 on something like a Blue Snowball if you want a desktop mic, or you can get a headset from Andrea or Plantronics for about $30 to $40, and they'll all be great. It becomes a law of diminishing returns after a while. You know, if you go out and spend $300 on a mic, you know, it's a bit like, again, there are versions of Dragon which come with a headset in the box.
Yeah, don't use that, right?
Okay. It's rubbish. It's one of those $10 headsets. And I don't know why they put it in. Because it actually creates a really bad experience out of the box. Now, if you go and buy, say, a $40 or $50 microphone, you're going to go from like 70% accuracy to 95% accuracy, you know, if you train it properly, even with an inexpensive microphone. But if you go from, say, you know, a $100 Blue Yeti to a $300, you know, super duper speech recognition enabled mic, you're probably going to go from 98% accuracy to 99.2. You know, so the diminishing returns start to kick in the more you spend. Keep it realistic. $40 to $100 will buy you a really good mic.
No, that's great. And I think that's important for people. But it, like we've said, it is an investment, and the software's a couple of $100s. But that's the thing. You kind of have to decide that you're going to do it and change your mindset first and then do it. So people have got the software, they've got a mic, and I'll put the links in the show notes for the mic I use and what you recommend. But basically, so they've got all that. So then, of course, the infamous Training Your Dragon. And of course, that's the title of your book, The Writer's Guide to Training Your Dragon. dragon and you go through that. But just briefly, what does training your dragon mean? And, you know, how should people do that?
Well, first things first, again, once you've got the all of the equipment you need, you can't then just fire up the software and go, this is amazing. I mean, in many ways, they've made dragons so accurate out of the box now that it is pretty amazing, you know. But people tend to dictate something really simple the first time they use it. So they'll say something like, I am testing dictation on my computer, and it gets it all right. And people go, wow, that's incredible. But the problem is when you start to dictate your own work, it all, you know, the wheels come off. So you have to train the software to how you write. And one of the things the software will pester you to do, and I mentioned this in the book, is to read training texts. They have all these different texts that you can read. Don't read them. You should never read them because you didn't write them. Mm-hmm. And the other thing it asks is, do you want to scan your emails and all of this? No, because you'll have emails written by other people in there. Mm. And, you know, you've got abbreviations in there and slang words. And, you know, it's just the last thing you should do. So the first thing you should do to train your dragon is basically just fire up the software, get all your equipment set up, and then just read, say, 2,000 words of something you've written. So print it out or put it on an iPad or whatever and sit there and just read it out. And whatever it gets wrong, correct it. Bang, you've just trained it to your own writing style. Mm. You save your profile, you exit the program, and then you go back in again. So you fire up the profile again, and you do another 2,000 words of something else you've written, something different. Don't do the same 2,000 words. Pick something new and do it again. And again, correct what's wrong. Add in any specific words or phrases that you are going to use on a regular basis. Or, I mean, I used to always have a problem with smash words. It always used to have smash and words as two separate words. So I put the name of the company, and Kobo as well was another one it always struggled with. So I put those into the vocabulary, and then I ask it to train itself to my voice saying those words. So I'll say the word three times, or however many times it asks me to do it, depending on the software. And bang, that's it. It's got it. It's now got you saying those words. Mm. And that's it. So it's a very gradual kind of building up of its algorithm, if you like, to not just your voice, but your writing style. And you start that by just dictating a few thousand words that you've written. Mm. And you're usually on your way after that. You know, you'll find you've probably got really, really good accuracy almost straight away by doing that.
No, that's awesome. And I think that's probably the mistake that I made before. The thing is, I'm pretty techie in many ways, but I hate reading how-to manuals and all of that. And I think I just was like, hey, I'm just going to do what it tells me. I'm just going to do it and it'll work. And then I think, as you said, I probably did the training wrong because I read their test material. And that makes it harder. So I think, you know, the other thing to say is this is pretty powerful software. It's getting more powerful because, of course, AI and speech recognition, and it recognizes accents, doesn't it? Obviously you have a different accent to me.
Yes, yes.
Orna Rossi, my friend of mine, is Irish, has quite an Irish accent. Americans, you know, Australians, anyone, it can train itself to your accent, right? So that's yes. Not a big deal.
You've got to specify it. You've got to specify it, but it's pretty good with pretty much most accents. There's not many other, I think it gets stuck on. I think Kiwi, it can have a problem with.
Oh, that's my husband.
Yeah, apparently. I mean, I know there's Australian accented English in there, but Kiwi is slightly.
It is slightly different, yeah.
Different, like instead of bed, they say bid in things. So it seems, but again, you train it. Train it.
Exactly.
So you go to the vocabulary for the word bed or whatever, and you say how you say it, and it should get it. So it copes with most accents.
Yeah. So I think like what you're saying is it'd be better to set aside, you know, a block of time to actually train it, do the reading and stuff like that. So what I'm excited about is you have courses now. I know, but I'm excited about this because your books are great. And actually, The Quick Cheats for Writing the Dragon, that's free, isn't it?
That's free, yes. You can pick that up at all good electronic
books. All good electronic bookstores. And the Writer's Guide to Training Your Dragon is more comprehensive. But yes, the courses are actually going to help people through the process, aren't they? So tell us a bit more about the courses so people can go get them.
Okay, well, the course, originally I'd intended to do a Writer's Guide to Training Your Dragon course, just one. And I just found I couldn't do it because the software is so different for the Mac and the PC. And here's the interesting thing. Both pieces of software use the same voice engine. Okay. Mm-hmm. So they use exactly, if you've got Dragon Premium 13 for PC, it uses the same engine as Dragon for Mac version 5. And if you have the new Dragon Professional Individual 15 for PC, it's the same as Dragon for Mac 6. Okay. So it's got the same voice engine, but the programs themselves are completely different. And how you teach vocabulary is completely different. How you do transcription is completely different, and so on and so on. So I found myself having to take a step back and produce two separate courses, one for Mac and one for PC. Mm. And interestingly, the Mac one as well covers how to use the PC version on your Mac if you decide, you know, you want to go that route. So they very much focus on getting you, you know, to 99% or better. And that's not an exaggeration, 99% or better out of the box, kind of in your first day or so of using it. And then the trick actually is maintaining that. It's not getting it out of the box, because it's pretty good out of the box. It's maintaining that and building your profile, getting your equipment set up correctly, getting all the technical aspects of things correct. Because even though I've tried to cover a lot of it in the book, it's surprising how many people, how many emails and stuff I get saying, how do I do this? How do I do that? You know, I just want to be shown. I just need someone to take me through it. So the idea behind the courses is that I'm going to take you through it. I'm going to take you through all of that, whichever platform you're on. Mm. So it's going to be the school of training your dragon.
Oh, I'm excited. I am doing it. I'm telling everybody I'm going to do it. I'm one of those people who did it. You know, I did the first draft of Destroyer of Worlds, which is actually up for an award, it's up for an international, international Thriller Writer Award. And it's interesting because obviously I've become a better writer over the years.
Because you dictated it.
Well, I wonder if there is an element, I wonder if there's an element of natural writing and emotional resonance that might come through more with a dictator draft. I don't know, but none of my other books have been nominated for an award, so I'm going to do this course, and I highly recommend, and not that I've done it yet as we talk, but I'm sure it's going to be amazing. So where can people find the course and the books and everything you do online?
Okay, well, the best place to go is to www.trainingyourdragon.com, and I've got a blog there. I've got loads of tips and tricks, and I try to keep that updated. It's got links there to all my books. It'll have links to the courses. And also, if you sign up on there, there's a little thing which says free video training. Mm. And if you sign up to that, there's about an hour's worth of free video content for you as well. So www.trainingyourdragon.com.
Fantastic. Thanks so much for your time, Scott. That was great.
Thank you for having me. It's been a pleasure.
So I hope you enjoyed the interview with Scott today, and you can get his books online, and also his course, The School of Training Your Dragon, is available July the 7th, and I'm definitely getting it because I am so determined to master dictation, to future-proof myself, really, and to see if I can change up my processes and see what happens. So next week, I'm talking about the roller coaster of traditional and indie publishing with Sean Black, who is Irish and he has a gorgeous voice, so you can look forward to that. We also have a real laugh, so join us for useful information and some fun. Okay, happy writing, and I'll see you next week. Thanks for listening today. I hope you found it helpful. You might also like the backlist episodes and show notes available at thecreativepen.com/podcast. You can also get your free author blueprint at thecreativepen.com/blueprint. If you'd like to connect, you can tweet me at The Creative Pen or find me on Facebook at The Creative Pen. See you next time.